just once over lightly with new Spick and Span. No rinsing, no wiping, once over. It's grand.
As the weather finally begins to warm, it's time to turn to that annual rite of spring. Yes, I'm talking about spring cleaning. Certainly, it can be tedious, but in the 1930s, the task was much more daunting. And tired of all the work it took to get the house spring clean, two Saginaw women came up with a better way to clean. And in the process, they launched a global brand still on store shelves today. Here now with the details is State Archivist with the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey. So first of all, Mark, explain why spring cleaning in pre-World War II America was a lot more of a headache than it is today.
It was mostly due to the way we heated homes. We didn't have the nice gas-forced air or geothermal like we have now, these modern conveniences. People would heat with coal, which was delivered by truck, usually, you know, went down a chute and dust got everywhere, or they had kerosene lamps, or they might heat with wood. My in-laws still heat with wood, so it's still dirty today. But there's a lot of soot and grime at the end of a long winter when you probably didn't have your windows open and had good airflow. You had dust and soot and grime. So you rolled up your sleeves and got to work.
You got your brush and your bucket out.
Yeah.
Which takes us to 1933, Saginaw, where a couple of women decided they'd had enough. There had to be a better way to clean. Who were they and what was it they came up with?
The two women were Naomi Stengline and Elizabeth McDonald, but she went by Bette. And I can't help but think when we talk about this story of Lucy and Ethel in an episode of I Love Lucy, just with a happier ending than those two usually had.
Yeah.
But these two, you know, their annual spring cleaning, like for many, was a three-step process. You got the soap and water out, you scrubbed it down, you rinsed it, and then if you really didn't want to look at those streaks, you had to wipe it with a cloth. So it was a three-step process. It was a pain, and they were just sick of it. So they're talking one day, just commiserating about this onerous annual process, thinking there has to be a better way, when Bette says, you know, my mother-in-law swears by using glue. And I think we all can relate. Everyone has a relative or a neighbor or family friend that has some secret remedy for everything. Glue is different in the 1930s than it is now. It was boiled down from animal products into a hard cake. And then if you wanted to use it as an adhesive, you would flake it off, melt it back down. But what these two did was take bits of the hardened glue for the cleaning process. So they started experimenting.
What did Naomi Stengline and Bette McDonald come up with?
So they took the hardened glue flakes and started experimenting with a couple different products. One was sodium carbonate, not bicarbonate, which is baking soda, just sodium carbonate, which is part of the soap process. And then trisodium phosphate, which I'm sure they could have found in a hardware store, because even in the 1930s, that product was around, commonly used for water softener or industrial cleaning. So they were probably just looking for some different non-abrasive additives to experiment with. And it just turns out that those hardened glue flakes and the sodium carbonate and the TSP, or trisodium phosphate, was the magic elixir that gave them the first non-abrasive cleaner that actually cut through grease and dirt.
So instead of three steps,
they had one.
Because they didn't have to rinse or wipe. Pretty sweet. And they came up with a name that lives on today, which is?
It's Spick and Span. She said, you know, it left her cleaning Spick and Span.
Because that was how you wanted your house to look, was Spick and Span.
Yeah, some of the ones that didn't make the cut were things like Cleans All or No Wipe or Easy Clean or Super Wipe, which frankly sound more like baby products than cleaning products.
A little bit. So they have something that works. How did they get the word out?
Yeah, this is a great story of grassroots marketing. So they hire their children to package up samples in just plain brown paper bags, and then they distributed them to as many households in the neighborhood as they could. So they basically are doing proof of concept. Send them around door to door, say, hey, try this cleaner. It's going to cut your workload in half. And then they also later employed the marketing step of having adults go door to door with the cleaner, knocking on the door. And while they were waiting for them to answer, they would actually find a section of their porch or their house to do a quick clean job with the product. By the time they answered the door, they could demonstrate the cleaner. Like, while I was waiting for you to answer the door, I was able to clean this bit of your house.
So people start asking for Spick and Span. How did Naomi and Bette start ramping up production?
Yeah, so their door-to-door approach created demand. Classic capitalism, right? They created demand. People started asking local stores to carry it, and they started getting a demand that they couldn't reach, so they had to build capacity. So then Naomi and Bette become CEOs and turn to their husbands to help build an actual plant there in Saginaw. So one husband becomes the plant manager, the other becomes the sales rep, and things just take off from there.
And I know ultimately Procter & Gamble came knocking at their door, and they made a lot of money.
By 1944, their gross sales were $1.9 million. They were profiting about $500,000. So the profits, $500,000 in 1944, was the equivalent of about $7 million.
That's pretty good.
In profit. So yes, that got Procter & Gamble's attention. They're the New York Yankees of cleaning supplies. So they come to town and say, we want your product. And they were hesitant at first because they had built this themselves. And they, frankly, had employed a lot of people. They did a lot of good for Saginaw. They had a factory. They were employing people. They created jobs. And they tried really hard to negotiate with Procter & Gamble to keep the factory there. But in the end, you know, it's Procter & Gamble. The agreement was they could keep the factory there until their raw materials ran out. And the payout from Procter & Gamble was around $1.9 million. That was the buyout price. $27 million in today's money.
Pretty sweet. So Naomi and Bette.
Not too shabby they get 11 years of work.
Absolutely. What did they do after selling out to Procter & Gamble?
So Bette and her husband found a place on Torch Lake and basically retired there for the rest of their lives. And Naomi and her husband had a summer house on Lake Huron, but also stayed in Saginaw part of the time and then also wintered in Florida. So they didn't completely leave the area.
It is a true entrepreneur story when you stop and think about it. It's very, very contemporary kind of in the way they came up, you know, saw a problem, came up with a solution, figured it out, marketed it, and reaped the rewards. And Spick and Span still on store shelves, isn't it?
It is, yep. You know, and there was a point when they went to the local paper and print shop and got some marketing, you know, get away from the brown paper bags. That's where the first design with the orange box came up.
It jumps out on store shelves. So the next time you think spring cleaning is just too much work, remember those two Saginaw women who thought the very same thing you do back in 1933, came up with a solution and got very rich as a result. Now we're going to pivot here. We're going to introduce a new segment stateside in the Michigan History Center we'll be launching this year. Our state is made up of 83 counties, but how much do we really know about the history of those counties? So we came up with something fun. Mark, give us an explanation.
Well, we came up with this idea because we've been doing so many interesting stories, and we want to make sure we cover the entire state. What better way to do that than to focus on our county's histories? There are 83, and I don't want to show favoritism, so what we want to do is pick one at random.
And as you say, we are showing no favoritism here, so you have the giant Michigan History Center spinning wheel.
It's giant. It's right here in studio with me. It is giant.
All right. So you're going to spin the wheel and tell us what county is going to come up next?
I am. So
go.
I'm going to get over to the big wheel and spin it. Let's see.
And the verdict is?
The verdict is Isabella County.
The giant spinning wheel has spoken. So check us out next week. We will be exploring the history of Isabella County. Thanks again to State Archivist with the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey, for helping us get our spring cleaning going and also launching our new spinning wheel of counties. Thanks so much, Mark.
Always a pleasure, Cynthia.